I went to the marina. There's a restaurant at the marina. I had a few drinks and lunch, and then I was like, I should go record the podcast.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 596 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Foz Mamoon. How you guys doing?
Good day.
Pretty good.
Good day. Yeah.
Goodbye.
Good day.
Good day, mate.
Nar.
This is a knife.
This is a spoon. I see you want to play knifey spoony.
Yeah, you went to a very different movie than I did, but okay.
I don't even know what movie he went to.
It's not the movie. The Simpsons made fun of it.
Oh.
I'm quoting The Simpsons. Anyway. I've seen you play this game before. Big week. Ryanair had an uncontained engine failure.
Yeah.
Do we know if this is the issue that Boeing was supposed to fix?
I do not believe we know yet.
Okay.
We're recording this Sunday evening. I think they've just appointed, declared who's going to be in charge of the investigation and some other fun bits. But so there's a plane, cracked window, passenger almost sucked, his head was outside of the aircraft, is my understanding from the reports. No?
No, it's terrifying. I'm just shaking my head and terror.
But pulled back in by his, roommates and whatnot. The plane then circled for a while to burn off fuel before landing.
That's a priority.
Because apparently they didn't want hot brakes when they landed, just in case they would be able to turn it and go again. I don't know.
Just use the hole to get out during anyway.
Presumably they had already shut down one engine, so they knew they weren't gonna use this plane again anytime soon.
Yeah.
Maybe the pilots didn't know that, but whatever. They burned off some fuel and circled for a bit, and then they landed.
And this was at Thessaloniki, right?
I guess so.
I think it was.
Yeah. I think he was going to Memmingen. And maybe, I guess, did it make it an emergency landing in Macedonia, and that's why Macedonia's got the control of the investigation? So I think I'd...
Maybe?
The plane lands, everybody turns out is safe, they get off, whatever. There's then some video from someone on the ramp looking at the engine, and you can see one full blade is missing from the front fan. There's some other damage in the other sections behind it, and then, the bottom of the engine nacelle in front of the engine is pretty roughed up. There's a couple chunks, tips missing of other fans. There's dents in them. And there's a hole in the side of the engine cowling leading towards the airplane, suggesting this is, in fact, an uncontained engine failure. And to Steven's point earlier, this is surprisingly similar or worrisomely similar to the Southwest incident some years ago where that woman died, right?
Yeah.
And there was a little more damage around the window, but a woman died in that one. So, and then there was a NOTAM or an AD, an airworthiness directive of some sort to sort of fix these issues. And Jason pointed out the compliance timeline was 2028. So we don't know that this is the same thing, but if it was, and this is a plane that was not fixed yet, that raises some questions about, risk tolerance and compliance timelines. This is something we've talked about before. We know this thing is broken, but we'll give you 10 years to fix it.
Yeah,
I always struggle with that.
How critical is it?
That just happened with the Pratt & Whitney engines on the 777s.
Really?
They just got an extension because Pratt can't make parts.
They can't make parts that are acceptable to be put back in the engines.
No, they basically told all their customers, we are not making any parts for anything other than GTFs.
Why?
Because the GTFs are so broken. and they're paying so much out in, you know, for all the downtime.
This is wild. So, okay, so let me just correct a couple of things. So the incident happened over North Macedonia.
Okay.
So they're helping lead the investigation.
Okay.
Okay. It returned to Thessaloniki after the incident.
Interesting.
And it was headed to Germany. So I think there's three countries involved in the investigation, plus Boeing.
Typically, the U.S. will send someone from the FAA as the representative of the country of original certification.
Yep. And it was an NG. So it was one that was on the list to be fixed.
And do we know if it had been fixed yet?
No, there's no notation on whether or not it had undergone the fix.
Okay. So that'll be an interesting data point.
Yep. I mean, it's not a good look, right? Like if Boeing needs to speed this up to make planes safe, I don't know that they can. Like, it's an engine issue, right? So it's an engine hardening issue, right?
Yes. And like, is it, can they go faster? This goes to Foz's point of like Pratt telling people they can't do things on certain planes because there's not enough time and capacity to produce parts. Are the people who need to produce these parts, the updates, whatever it is, are they not producing them fast enough, or are the airlines unwilling to take aircraft out of service because they don't want downtime? And it takes too long, you know, X amount of time to do the installation, and they're going to run, you know, one line instead of two.
Yep.
Kind of like anything is possible if you throw enough money at it. That's not always the right answer, but, you know, I don't know.
Like, I don't know that Boeing has the line space if they wanted to take more planes to do this. Right, you got to have somewhere to park the planes while you're doing this too.
Who's doing the work though? Is it happening at Boeing? Most of these repairs don't happen. Like, you don't send the plane back to Boeing.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know where they're happening. So,
you know, usually you park it in an MRO somewhere. Some guys bang on it with, you know, wrenches and stuff, and then it's done. That's the guy's aircraft maintenance. Don't follow it.
Foz is like, oh, just park them in Moses Lake. Eventually, Moses Lake gets full. Foz, yeah. Like, it does have a capacity.
Does it though?
I mean, it is out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, I'm interested to see what the FAA and what Boeing reports back. I mean, I think Ryanair may be the first to report something, so we'll see what gets said on the cause. And yeah, the FAA SAFO on CVR. So the SAFO is a safety alert for operators memorandum, right? Like it's a document.
Yeah, it's a memo. It is. It's a sternly worded letter in every sense of the term. The FAA sometimes issues these, and they have the force of recommendation.
Okay.
They are not airworthiness directives. They are not changes to the CFRs. They are not requirements. They are encouragement and recommendations from the FAA for airlines to do something. Specifically related to safety. And in this case, it's around the cockpit voice recorders, CVRs. The latest one that came out last week is that the FAA is recommending that airlines institute in policy and document it and write it into their regulation or their operating procedure. So then failure to comply with it actually is a problem. But recommending that they add into it anytime there is a reportable activity, the circuit breaker for the CVR gets pulled so that the data is maintained.
Okay.
Which would be a good idea.
Is this anytime anything happens involving the cockpit, or is this anytime an incident regardless of the involvement of the cockpit? So there's a disturbance in the back of the plane.
Anything that they would be writing up as a FAA incident. A reportable incident.
Okay.
And it's not 100% practical all of the time. You know, your question of does the plane return to service or not, for example. But one of the bits that they noted, and also this will start to stop being an issue over time because the 25-hour CVR rule will go into effect and the recordings will last longer. With the current CVRs that have much, much shorter recording windows, the example cited, and this came from an NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board recommendation following the Alaska Air door plug blowout, where the plane landed and everything was fine, but they kept the power on and they lost the recording of what was happening in the cockpit during the emergency.
Yep.
In this case, the goal is to have recordings from incidents like that. And, like, you know, of course they follow the checklist. You know, it was fine, I'm sure, right? But, like, what would we learn if we knew about how the, you know, interaction between the pilots was going? Did the checklist readout work perfectly, or did they have to go back and do something again? And, like, you get some of that from talking to the guys, but
there's like a loss in time because people don't pull the breaker on.
Right. And so this one landed and, like, stayed powered on for longer than an hour or whatever it was, and they lost the audio. Yep. And so two different ways to solve that problem, but it's kind of amazing to me that it's not amazing at all. It's disappointing that the FAA's answer to the NTSB is, well, we'll suggest it.
What's the medium on the CVR and just general data recorders? What's the medium that they record to?
The modern ones record to effectively an SD card. I don't know if it's compact flash, but it's digital. It's not.
We just can't spring for like 32 gigs or 64 gigs. We're just like 16 gigs. That's all we can. That's all we can give.
Have you seen where flash memory prices are these days?
This is true. I mean, I'll donate them. I mean, I've got a stack of flash cards. So
this is my favorite one. I got a 32 meg card right here.
Nice. Oh, so they're recording on megabyte cards. Great.
Well, Steven, I don't have a black box sitting on my desk. I have a 32 meg SD card. Yeah, I have some random ass old, very small SD cards that I hang on to for nostalgic reasons. But anyways, it is a memory card issue. There's also some concerns. There have been concerns raised by pilots about having the extra information there, and will management go back and read it or listen to it or whatever for nefarious reasons and whatnot. So some reasonable, some not, in my opinion, but that's part of where you're at.
I mean, is it likely that management goes back and listens to people's CVR recordings?
No.
I feel like that's a non-starter.
The age of AI, you don't actually have to listen to it.
This is true.
You've got to get it off the machine, which.
Yeah. Someone's got to go in the plane.
Take it off the plane. I mean, anyway, there's a lot there, and I understand some of the concerns. I think the public safety situation outweighs those concerns. That the FAA agrees that we should have 25-hour recorders because they needed that rule, but it's only for new planes going forward, I think starting next year or the year after. So, or maybe later this year. I don't know. At some point, it finally will take effect, and that's good, but we still have this problem of they want you to pull the breaker. Some airlines will institute it as a policy, but it's not required. And I think that's a little silly.
Oh, so they're going to 24-hour recording starting next year. Planes manufactured next year.
Is that the rule? I don't remember the exact date that came out of it. It was either later this year or next year. They finally got that one across the finish line.
Yeah. So they have to source 32 or 64 gigabyte cards. Got it.
No. Honeywell's got your box, buddy. Don't worry about it. Honeywell's got it ready to go. They're sitting on the shelf, ready for delivery.
EasyJet. And the private equity deal, what's going on with EasyJet?
So past 6-8 weeks or so, Castle Lake has been trying to buy them.
And Castle Lake is private equity.
Castle Lake's a private equity company. They did a big part of the refinancing of SAS that then coordinated it selling to Air France KLM and then that whole scene there. Which, by the way, congrats to Enko there. SAS CEO for now being the newly announced CEO of Air Canada.
Not till January.
Starting next year, yeah. But anyway, back to EasyJet. So Castle Lake has some experience in this and has been slowly increasing their bid. I think they got up to £6.90 was the accepted bid when EasyJet finally said, okay, that's enough, we'll take it. Apollo Management, which is another private equity company that also has some experience with airlines, on this side of the Atlantic, came back and was like, how about 715? So seems to be a little bit of a bidding war going on there.
Is EasyJet in trouble? Like, I guess what spurred this?
If I remember correctly, their stock dropped.
Yeah, more is more.
And so people got worried And
it's not even that people got worried. They saw an opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah. But there's the other part of it is like they saw an opportunity, but an opportunity for what? The leading story for the Castle Lake version is not similar to the SAS deal. It's a show up, break them up, and part them out.
Hmm.
They've got a decent order book with relatively short time deliveries from Airbus. They've got slots in various places. I'm not sure how much those are actually worth, but it's some of the, you know, like they're talking about a huge Gatwick slot portfolio. I don't think Gatwick's full, but good times at Gatwick are good to have. Like there's a lot going on there, but there's discussion of sort of splitting them up and giving a chunk to IAG, a chunk to Air France KLM, a chunk to Lufthansa Group. Maybe Wizz Air buys some of it and everybody, you know, everybody gets their little piece and a competitor's removed from the market and Castle Lake takes a profit out as a result. That was the theory circulating.
I hate all this.
More is more. They got to have bigger profits so they don't count.
Yeah, but I mean, it's bad for everybody, really. Like, is Lufthansa even interested in slots at Gatwick? Probably not.
Probably not, but they might care about Geneva, where, if I remember correctly, there's an EasyJet Switzerland Geneva subsidiary, yeah. And I'm pretty sure Geneva's their hub. And whether they want the slots or they just want to eliminate a competitor and have another, because, you know, why not have, you know, Lufthansa or Swiss EasyLine, whatever, as your next CityLine subsidiary for breaking the unions and paying less for operations.
My rebuttal would be like, this is kind of like Spirit, right? Like this is, you're competing with the couch. Like these aren't passengers who are going to go fly your airline because EasyJet doesn't exist anymore. Like that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a little different. I do think that there's a chunk of business travel that sits on EasyJet that's larger than what Spirit carried.
Yeah. Although those employees should quit. Go somewhere else into being forced to fly EasyJet.
I mean, look, think about it. If you're depending on where you are in London, right? Heathrow is not practical.
That's true. It's fair.
Right. And EasyJet, like, you know, a lot of people, why do people fly Southwest? Right.
I mean, it's kind of like if you're going anywhere that's like 2 hours away and Gatwick's more doable for you, it's your carrier of choice then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And it's not only Gatwick. They have a big presence there, but like there are all of there's all the other airports around London. Yeah.
Yeah, they're at Stansted as well. So
So here's the question for you. Like if they were to get rid of EasyJet, dissolve them, and sell off the slots, Is BA actually interested in or IAG interested in Gatwick or Stansted slots? Is Virgin Atlantic? Probably not. Who takes those? Ryanair?
I mean, if you look, a lot of international carriers have been adding capacity at Gatwick.
Just because it relieves pressure on
their Heathrow's full.
Yeah. Heathrow's full, and it also is a different catchment area because its location is not anywhere near Heathrow.
Yeah. I think you guys are taking me as being like contrarian. I'm trying to ask the questions here. This is what an interviewer does, gentlemen. Gotta push the envelope.
Speaking of Gatwick not being anywhere near Heathrow, just as an aside, the England-Norway World Cup quarterfinal match, BA and Norwegian made a social media bet that one would change their logo for, I don't know, a day or a week or whatever, if whoever won. And Norwegian made good on it, but like did a little bit where they made a video flying in to deliver a USB stick with the logo on it because, you know, you definitely can't email that sort of thing.
No.
And it was very well done, but it's Norwegian, so they fly to Gatwick. And the woman doing it actually took the train into town and then back out to Heathrow instead of getting on the bus and taking the direct connect across. But anyway, it was just very funny. Like
I always forget that BA's HQ is like basically by Heathrow. Yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
So yeah, the breakup I think is probably bad for most consumers, like any of these things, but probably good for the companies getting their little piece of the pie.
Yeah. But is it good for the airline if they're getting broken up?
Oh, it's bad for EasyJet. It's good for the airlines buying the pieces.
Yeah.
And, you know, almost certainly bad for the employees. Back office is definitely a problem. We'll see about pilots and flight attendants and how that plays out. But
I mean, what drives EasyJet to take the deal? Is it
money?
Simply, we want a golden parachute for the execs and we'll get out on top.
I mean, they technically have a fiduciary responsibility to their stockholders.
To take the deal if it makes money.
If it's a very lucrative deal, they kind of have to.
Why is their stock doing so badly?
Well, I think all airline stocks took a hit with the war.
Yep.
Right.
I think EasyJet's issues have been a little longer term than that. They've had challenges with trying to become a little more business focused, but not necessarily driving the yields and they can't get their costs low enough because of the markets they operate in, where their bases are, things like that. But
yeah.
Is it kind of like because they operate to like Han or something, and it's like they call it Frankfurt East or something, things like that. Like not catching.
And that's the Ryanair problem.
Yeah. Bordeaux, but it's in Italy. So
that's a long way away.
That's my point. So American and Chicago O'Hare. American's been getting some gates.
The annual reassignment based on operations, they won a few gates back. So
this is good, right? I think my opinion, United overplayed their hand. And it's coming back to bite them.
So overplayed United, how?
United pushed, right, for some of this. United was like, oh, put this in place. We want to have controls. Because they were like, we're locked into these gates. And I think the FAA took that and said, okay, we're going to start doing this. But their way of doing it was, we're going to reallocate things.
So they do that every year, though. We've known that this happens every year.
Yeah, but I don't think United was maybe thinking past 2025.
But we also have to see if American can actually maintain their operation.
Very true.
I learned something recently.
What'd you
So the brainchild at American, who is responsible for their current network strategy, is also the person who is behind the Hublet.
Cleaver?
Yep.
Wow.
Which explains everything when you put it in that perspective.
I mean, we've had this, you and I had the discussion, Foz. I think Seth was out. We talked about, why is American so weak in other airports outside of DFW? Like, why does it feel like their operations are so weak? And it's a real problem for them, I feel like.
I think you got to lump Charlotte in the DFW situation. They're like 80% of the traffic there.
Like those two together.
Would you not include Miami?
I think there's enough variety at Miami. They certainly have a very dominant position, but they're not 80%+ of the traffic, right?
Right. But I feel like in Miami, they do put a solid effort in, just like Charlotte and DFW.
To try and control certain markets.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's fair. But I would say even in Phoenix, they're not the super carrier in Phoenix.
No, not at all. But like Phoenix, they struggle because of Southwest. I mean, even America West was like that when you think back as far back as 25 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I just wonder. Okay, so they've gotten what, five gates at O'Hare? Is that the story? They got five gates on the G Pier, I think is what it is.
Maybe was it five or I thought it was three.
So it's three gates. I think it's a 5% gain for them. It kind of knocks, I think United's left with like two or three gates in G. So it's kind of knocking United out of G, which is probably a good thing since most people are walking around G going, where is the baggage claim for these gates? No, it's over a terminal.
One terminal, two terminals.
It's two terminals over. Yeah, good point. But I wonder what American's going to do to actually like keep those gates in play for themselves. So they've announced they're going to start flying Chicago O'Hare to Narita, and Ontario.
But they're just displacing Zhao for Narita.
Zhao for Narita. Zhao will keep the Haneda spot, but they will no longer fly to Narita from Chicago.
Yeah.
Zhao's an interesting... I think that's actually more of the story than American. Because for American, it's like, oh, it's just we're going to connect people on our partner via Chicago. Like, it's we'll put people through Narita to wherever they're going. But for Zhao, it's interesting to me that they give up that space that they could have filled. Like, they
could probably put that wide buddy somewhere else.
Yeah.
Welcome to the world of joint ventures.
Yeah. It's just interesting that they turn that over to, they really are coveting the Haneda slots. That's my point.
Well, remember the Haneda slots are assigned differently.
Yep.
Those are allocated by the Japanese government in a very strict manner, and no US carrier could just say, actually, we're going to go to Haneda now. Like,
yeah, yep.
The slots aren't available. So, and for what it's worth, American is at like 68% of Miami. So they're still pretty sizable there.
Yeah. And I think the bloggers were like, well, this opens up, you know, the ability to use your system wide upgrades on Narita. That's probably not the driving force for American to start this route.
It also opens up the potential for 400,000 point business class awards.
Woo! Yay. I'm thrilled.
You can make the argument that if there's no inventory, there's no inventory, so it doesn't matter. But
it makes sense to me. I think American could do more at O'Hare to make it a compelling hub, and I think that's kind of going back to what you and I talked about, Foss.
I mean, American could do a lot more at a lot of airports.
They don't care,
but they don't care, right? They're very risk averse. That's the fundamental problem.
Like, I still think Philly, there's a ton of potential at Philly, even if it's not O and D. Like, the connecting ability of Philly to relieve the New York area and connect passengers onward is, to me, a huge plus for them.
Yeah, but they're not going to do it.
Because it's a risk.
It's a risk.
Too many cheesesteaks in Philly airport. And
you know, if they're going to do it, they're going to do it with buses and regional jets. They're not going to do mainline.
I actually saw. Okay, so I was at Philly. I didn't tell you the story when we talked. When I was at Philly, a guy walked up to the Allentown bus.
Okay, yeah,
it's Allentown, right?
Yep. Yeah.
He walked up to the gate, and he goes, "What the f- is this?" And you got to bleep that out, Seth. And he goes, "I thought I was getting on an airplane." Like out loud, like as loud as he could say it at an airport, and. He just was like, well, I guess I'm getting on another bus. So I guess he came from a bus.
So what do you do? Come from Atlantic City or Wilmington?
Atlantic City to Allentown via Philadelphia.
I was like, hey, man, you're at least you're not delayed via the storms. I mean, that's kind of a plus. Like, they can drive in the rain.
That's funny.
All right. Boeing is opening 737 production in Everett.
They opened it up last week, same day as the window blowout. Oopsie.
Whoops.
I mean, the timing could have been worse. It could have been the day after, and that, like, basically had the problem of what Paris Air Show last year, where they couldn't do anything because it's just after the Air India crash.
Yeah. And what are they going to produce? Is it just the 737 MAX 8s, 9s? Do we know? Or are they just like all everything?
I believe the MAX line is a MAX line is a MAX line. I don't think it's split like some of the lines in Europe for Airbus.
Gotcha. Okay. So that'll move some production. Is China taking their planes now? Or are we still like on the unknown on whether China is actually going to take the planes that they ordered pre-COVID and during COVID?
That's a good question. I have not been paying much attention to that.
Okay.
Other people are taking planes though, and Boeing is pushing rapidly towards, maybe not rapidly, but aggressively towards getting the FAA to let them continue to boost production rates. And I would say this isn't moving production from Everett, but it is augmenting, not Everett, Renton, which is where the 737s have always only been made, until today, or till last week. So, I think that this is augmenting that production. They need more capacity, and they did a good job of, I'll give Boeing credit. They did a very good job of hyping this used to be where the 747s were made. And now, you know, the future of the airline is building 737s here. And getting all of the influencers who they invited to the event to pitch that spiel. I'm not sure, like, hey, look, we make a bunch of smaller planes now is demonstrating your, you know, dominance of the industry. But
when they get the 777X certified,
yeah,
will they do that in Everett?
Yeah, those will stay at Everett.
Okay. So they'll have 10 or two lines going then.
Yeah, that line is still there. The 787 line is now only in South Carolina.
Okay.
And then, yeah. So the 777, 737, 877. I don't think the 76 is the 76 line still churning out KC-46s.
KC-46s are still coming out. Yep.
So that's out of Everett too.
Okay. What are they doing then? Renton, like just 737s? I thought they were.
They're doing like 46 a month. They're doing 46 a month or something like that at Renton, but they want to go bigger, so they need more space.
Okay, but I thought they were doing KC-46s there too.
No, they did 75s. 76s were never at Renton.
Oh, okay.
They might be flying them in commercial and then doing the retrofit to military there.
That's true. Yeah. Good point. Okay. And then the MAX 7 is apparently close to getting certified.
There's a lot of rumors circulating. It'll be signed before the end of July.
That'd be big news for Southwest. Is probably like giddy.
One would assume since they've got like 300 of them on order, not quite 200. I mean, they've also though, and Southwest has been trading out a lot for MAX 8s just because they want to keep taking the new planes. But it'll be very interesting to see how Southwest approaches this. There are a lot of markets where they're adding way more capacity than they need because all they have is the bigger plane.
Yeah.
And so getting more of the smaller, more efficient plane will open up some pricing power for them that they don't hold today.
And then Delta is talking about their first Dash 10 will be delivered next year.
Yeah, there's a story circulating. I think it was on Flight Global talking about their expectations for both the MAX 10 and the 787s and, you know, bringing them into service and what they're going to do and where they're going to go. You know, and one of the questions there is what seats are they putting in them?
44F.
Exactly.
I'm surprised, like this is my personal surprise factor. I'm surprised United didn't say anything about it because I would think United's more interested in the MAX 10 from a usability perspective because of the XLR Neo issues they've been having and the range and the markets that they want to serve.
Yeah. I mean, right. But United also moved Coast over to 321 Neos from the Transcom service that was going to be MAX 10s is now on Airbus. And so the MAX 10 is more of a capacity play than a premium play, which also I think a lot of it is like you get the story you get depending on who you talk to from the airline at the major industry event where you're doing an interview and what they're willing to talk, what the executive wants to talk about. I think a big part of this came from an interview at IATA, and that's what the Delta people chose to talk about. And so that's the story that comes out.
Yeah.
Yep. Not that United isn't also seeing similar dates or times or expectations. It's just they were talking about something else.
Gotcha. Yep. What were you going to say, Foz?
I mean, I think the big question is United still going to take 737-10s?
Yeah.
Right?
I think from a capacity standpoint, they need to, right? To replace 75s and some 76 domestically?
Maybe, but 75s are mostly just doing transcons. Except for the 3s.
753s are, yeah.
Yeah, but the 3s, like 737-10 is still not big enough to replace a 753.
Well, and the question is, can they do Denver-Honolulu on a 737-10?
That sounds pleasant.
Yeah, that sounds very unpleasant.
But also remember that a lot of the capacity plays are steps, right? You don't do a one-to-one replacement. You put in a MAX 10 where you put in a MAX 8 where G was so that something else becomes upgraded. And, you know, it cascades along.
Yeah. Yeah,
everything steps up one. It's not just a one-to-one switch, but I think they got to take the 10s. They got enough routes where they need that. Newark needs 20 extra seats per plane. Not that the terminal can handle it, but they need 20 extra seats per plane.
Especially to Florida.
Yeah.
Maybe to Florida, but I mean, there's a lot of routes they don't need that much more capacity. Right? They're running 319s. They're running 800s. There's still the ability to add more capacity on a number of routes, and they just don't.
Max 10 to Rochester?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Black Cloud would love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are routes where they've put 321 Neos on where they probably could put a 737-10 and be happy with it.
Yeah.
And move that Neo somewhere else or the XLR somewhere else.
Well, I mean, and you also, right, they have the non-lie flat premium configure Neos that you can basically will be comparable in layout to the Max 10, but depending on stage length and other factors, crew bases, et cetera, gives you some flexibility to mix and match.
Yeah. 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 All right. Well, anything else you guys want to chat about?
Not for me.
In our bonus topics, we're going to talk about Delta One and some changes to Delta One, things that are happening.
Bad news.
Bad news. San Francisco to Adelaide. We're going to talk about Alaska's FAA issues, DOT and full fare rules, Southwest and Air Premia Interline, the thing that no one saw coming. And then a listener question. So if you're a Patreon subscriber, stick around for that. If not, we will talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.